Gentlemen of the jury, you are the judges of the evidence to be laid before you. Be just and fear not, for the true administration of justice is the foundation of good government. Famous jury trial. Dramatizations of cases taken from actual court history. The names of persons and places have been altered to protect the identity of those concerned. The trial of Judson Hearst.
And this is the case that the state will prove to you, members of the jury. On the 5th of May of this year, the defendant, Judson Fisk, fired 3 shots from a .22 revolver into the body of his wife, Judith Fisk. The bullet taking effect in her heart and killing her instantly. This deed, we will show, was willful, premeditated murder, motivated by the defendant's unreasonable jealousy of his wife and committed by Judson Fisk when he was in full possession of all of his faculties. That he planned the crime and carried it out in the full knowledge of what he was doing. We will prove murder to you. Murder in the first degree.
Fisk began. The district attorney, after his opening address, called his first witness, Evelyn White.
Mrs. White, what relation are you to the deceased, Judith Fisk?
She was my sister, my younger sister.
Why is the relationship between you and your sister a close one?
Yes, very close. Judith always came to me for advice, or for comfort when she was in trouble, ever since she was a little girl.
She lived with you and your husband before her marriage to the defendant?
Yes, she had a job as a secretary in an office downtown, and lived with my husband and me until her marriage 2 years ago.
Did you approve of her marriage?
I emphatically disapproved. I couldn't believe it when Judy came to me that day and told me she was engaged. Well, this is what I had to say. Fred Fisk asked me to marry him last night.
Judy.
And I accepted. You're mad?
No.
Just in love.
But Judy, he's 30 years older than you are.
22 years older.
And he's a cripple.
Don't call him that.
Judy, you can't do it.
But get on your nerves. You'd be nearly out of your mind in a month.
No.
I can see that you might feel that way about it, but you're not in love with him.
And I am.
You love Fiddle Sticks. You're sorry for him. And just let your romantic imagination run away with your common sense. But you soon get tired of playing Florence Nightingale, and then what? It'll be too late.
It isn't Kitty, even.
He doesn't need Kitty. Judy, it isn't his money, is it? Answer me truthfully, please.
I think that's a pretty rotten question, isn't it?
The answer is no. It's not his money.
And I really don't want to argue about Judd. I've made up my mind, and I've already accepted him.
You're going to have to do a lot of arguing before I send out any invitations.
Now, wait a minute, please. Before you say anything more, I want to tell you something. Besides being old enough to be your father and a cripple, there's a mental aspect to think of. I knew Judd before his accident. And he was one of the most popular and charming men around here. You know what he's like now? Gloomy, bitter, and irritable. He drives people away from him.
I know all that. He tried to drive me away at first, but I wouldn't go. He does it to protect himself, because he can't bear to be pitied.
The point is that he's not normal mentally. When a person had as much as Judd had to live for, money, looks, popularity, everything, and then has something like that awful accident happen to him, Judd can't bear to see people playing golf or tennis or dancing. Because it reminds him that he used to be a fine athlete once and he'll never be able to play any game again. That's why he drives people away from him. He resents them. And he doesn't want their city because he gets more than enough from himself.
I don't think you should talk like that when you don't understand him at all. I've made it my business to try and understand.
So you couldn't persuade your sister not to marry Judson Fisk?
No, I tried to make her see that Judd wasn't really normal mentally. I tried to make her realize what living with him would be like.
By not normal mentally, you don't mean to imply that there is any question in your mind as to his complete sanity.
That is objected to as incompetent.
Sustained. Did your sister ever tell you her marriage was unhappy?
It was common knowledge that it was very unhappy.
Objection.
Thank you, Doc.
Just say if your sister told you that she was unhappy.
Don't answer, Mrs. White. The question is objectionable.
Did you ever observe any conduct between the defendant and your sister which led you to intervene?
Well, I told you that she had to do something about Judd's behavior then, and she said she couldn't control him. She said she'd tried everything she could think of, but nothing worked. And then she broke down and cried.
What was this behavior she couldn't control?
Her jealousy. She caught the life out of her with extreme jealousy, and I told her she must leave him at once, but she wouldn't. She said she still loved him, and somehow she'd find a way of convincing him that she did.
Did you ever witness this jealousy to manifest itself in public?
All the time. Judd made no effort to conceal it. If he didn't like the way a man danced with Judith or talked to her, Judd wouldn't hesitate to insult the man and practically accuse Judith of infidelity.
When was the last of these scenes you witnessed?
The night before the murder. It was at the country club. Judith was talking with young Dr. Blake. They went out on the terrace together. Judd followed them, limping with his cane, and when he came up to them, he threw his drink in Dr. Blake's face. I was nearby, and of course, they tried to hush the thing up. Dr. Blake took the club by the chairs without speaking to anyone. I drove Judith and Judd home and then came on back to the dance.
Did they say anything on the way home?
Not a word. Judith sat there as though she were carved out of marble, and Judd just scowled. I got Judith aside and asked if she wanted to spend the night with us, but she said no, it would be better if she were with Judd in the mood he was in.
And it was the next morning that she was shot.
Yes, the next morning.
Thank you, Mrs. White. Your witness. Mrs. White, your sister was Judd Fisk's second wife, wasn't she?
Yes, his first wife was killed in the auto accident that injured Judd so badly.
Did you ever observe that his behavior towards the first Mrs. Fisk was in any way objectionable?
Oh, no. They were devoted to each other.
I see. Well, that's all.
Call Jonah Wills. Jonah Wills! Jonah Wills!
Jonah Wills, take the stand. Jonah Wills, you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth.
I do.
Mr. Wills, did you see the defendant, Judson Fisk, on the morning of May 5th? That is the morning on which Mrs. Fisk was shot?
Yes, sir, I did.
Tell us the circumstances.
He came into my shop and wanted to buy a pistol. What kind of a pistol should I? Any kind, as long as it shoots, it is. All my pistols are guaranteed to shoot once, I said. Then he says, signified like, maybe that'll be all I have to shoot.
And you sold him a pistol?
Yes, sir. Sold him a neat little 22 and some bullets.
I show you a pistol and ask you if that's the one you sold to the defendant that morning.
Yes, sir. That's her. New basis.
Now, what happened after you made the sale?
Well, I helped Mr. Fisk out of his car. Leastways, I walked with him. He wouldn't let you help him. He got in and told the chauffeur to drive him home, and out they went.
Have you any idea what time this was?
Just going on 10:30, sir.
I see. That's all. Cross ground.
No question. Oh, wait a minute. I have got one question.
Did Mr. Fisk's manner seem to you quite normal that morning?
Well, sir, it seemed like he was thinking of something else. Empty-minded like he was.
Like a man of a day?
Yes, sir.
Perhaps even like a man walking in his sleep.
Abject. That is leading the witness.
Suspense. But he did seem dazed and absent-minded.
Yes, sir. And as you say, like a man walking in his sleep.
Abject. Those words were put in the witness's mouth by the defense attorney.
Yes, strike the last part.
That's all, Mr. Wills.
Call William Gage.
William Gage? William Gage? William Gage?
William Gage, what is your profession?
A police officer.
Did you see the defendant on the morning of May 5th?
Yes, sir.
I went out to his place and answered to a phone call. What did that call say? Said Mrs. Fisk was dead. Who made the call? Mr. Fisk. He said, I just got my wife. She's dead. So I went on out. What did you find when you got there? Mrs. Fisk lying on the living room floor, dead as per the phone call. Mr. Fisk was staring out the window. He said he shot her. He wouldn't answer any further questions.
Did you find the weapon?
Mr. Fisk had it in his pocket. He gave it up when I asked for it. But still not talking any.
Is this pistol here People's Exhibit number one, the one you found?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Your witness.
Officer, how would you describe Mr. Fisk's mental condition when you saw him that morning?
Dazed, sir. Not thinking or feeling, so far as you could judge.
That's all.
Call Dr. James Metcalf.
Expert testimony confirmed what everybody knew, that Mrs. Fisk was killed by bullets fired from the pistol found on her husband. And then the prosecution apparently scotched any possible insanity defense by putting experts on the stand who testified that Judson Fisk was sane. And that jealousy, while a mental ailment, could by no stretch of the imagination be called insanity within the meaning of the law. Then the prosecution rested its case, leaving the spectators convinced that nothing could now save Judson Fisk from paying for his crime with his life. We will continue with this trial in just a moment. In the courtroom, the trial was resumed, and the defense attorney called his first witness, the defendant, Judson Fisk himself.
Mr. Fisk, how old are you?
I'm 48.
You were 45 when you married for the second time?
Yes, I was.
Your first wife died in an automobile accident?
Yes, when I was 40.
The same accident that left you permanently lame?
Yes.
Will you tell the jury something of your life before that accident occurred?
Abject. That has nothing to do with this charge of murder.
It is the contention of the defense that it has everything to do with the present charge.
I overrule the objection. The witness may answer any proper questions on this line. You were wealthy, were you not, Mr. Fisk?
I was more than comfortable.
Successful in your business?
Yes.
Fond of athletics?
Yes. I played a fair game of tennis, better game of golf.
Well, forgive this question, Mr. Fisk, but you were in love with your first wife. You and she were happy together?
Very happy.
Now I must bring up a subject, a period of your life, which I know will be painful for you to recall. After this automobile accident. Will you tell a jury about your life after that?
Well, first I was told that Mary was dead. Then the doctor said I'd never walk again. Some injury to the spine. Specialists came and suggested operations. I let them operate. More because I hoped I might die on the operating table and because I had any hope that it'd do me any good. I was in bed a year. There was a good deal of physical pain. I could stand that. It was the hopelessness and mental agony.
Yes.
Well, at the end of a year, the doctor had fixed me up so that I could walk a little with crutches, just a few steps first.
Did you succeed in adjusting yourself to your new life when you left the hospital?
No. I failed utterly. Snapping everyone who came near me, hating the whole world, most of all myself. Then I met Judith.
And you fell in love with her?
Yes. I think I did the first time I saw her. And as a result, I was more savage with her than anyone else. But it didn't bother her. She simply didn't pay any attention to my rudeness. Wouldn't believe me when I swore that she irritated me. Well, that went on for 6 months. Then one evening, she came over to see me. I was in the garden, watching the sunset when she came across the lawn to me.
Hey!
Hello.
I've got something on my mind, Jack.
Look, how often do I have to tell you I'm not interested in what's on your so-called mind?
Well, this might interest you. It concerns you.
Yeah, well, leave me out of it.
I can't very well. You're off of it.
Half of what?
Well, this idea.
What idea?
Jack, will you marry me?
What?
I love you, Jack.
You don't know what to think.
Yes, I do. And I know if it's ever going to be said, I've got to say it. With your pride and sense of honor, you'd never say it first. And that's why I've come to you tonight to tell you. proudly and humbly. That for me and all the world is all we do.
That's a magnificent gesture, Judith. It means, well, a good deal to me. I thank you more than I can say. Good night, Judith.
Don't you want me, Dad?
Oh, look at me, Judith. Besides the fact that I'm hopelessly lame, I'm 20 years older than you. I got an ugly face, vile temper. Oh, hang it all, what's the use of going on? You made your gesture, and I bless you for it. Can't be such a heel to accept what you're offering.
I love your ugly face and vile temper. Please, get that through your muddled head, my darling. I love you.
Judith. Oh, Judith. Well, we were married the next month. I should never have given in, but I saw one last chance for happiness, and I grabbed for it. It was criminal.
Your marriage was not happy?
Judith did everything she could to make me happy. I was happy with her when we were alone together. I hate dragging all this out. Fact is, I've been hurt so unbearably once before, when I'd lost everything that made life worth living. Now I'd found something to live for once again. I was tortured with a fear that I'd lose this, too. Well, things came to a head the night of May the 4th. The country club.
Yes?
There was a young doctor there. Dr. Blake. As I came up, I just heard Judith say, come at 11 tomorrow morning. Judd won't be home then. I saw him warn her with a gesture that I was approaching. She turned to speak to me just as I slapped my drink full into Blake's face.
Did you tell her what you'd heard?
No, I thought it over and decided to pretend that I was just angry at her being on the terrace with Blake. So that she'd be unsuspicious and keep her meeting with Blake the next morning.
What did you do the next morning?
I went into town and bought a revolver. I loaded it on the way home in the car. Planned to catch Judith and Blake and shoot them both and then shoot myself.
What happened when you got home?
As we came up the drive toward the house, we passed Dr. Blake's car going out. And I was wild and furious. When we got to the house, I went in as fast as I could. Judith was in the living room.
Hello, Judd. What? Why, you look so strange.
I passed Dr. Blake in the drive.
Oh, then you know?
Yes. That's why I'm going to kill you, Judith.
What? Oh, no, Judd, no. Put away that gun. You don't understand.
He was killed instantly?
Yes. Her maid came running in then. She told me she'd been present when the doctor examined my wife. Judith was going to have a baby. She didn't want to tell me until she was sure. Because it was what I wanted more than anything else in the world. She didn't want disappointment. I don't remember what I did after that. I guess I called the police.
The next witness, Dr. James Pearson, testified that the defendant was suffering from high blood pressure induced by arteriosclerosis, or hardening of the arteries.
And tell me, Doctor, isn't one of the effects of this disease to lower the blood supply to the brain?
Yes, it is.
Assuming a person suffering from arteriosclerosis, what would be the effect of a strong emotion, such as an acute jealous rage, upon the blood supply to the brain?
It would be lessened materially.
And what would the effect be upon the behavior of this hypothetical individual?
It would induce a semi-comatose condition.
Can you explain that more fully to the jury, please?
The individual would be in a trance or a dreamlike state, acting without inhibitions or mental self-control.
Would such an individual be responsible for his or her actions in this condition?
If the condition were at all severe, the individual would not be responsible.
With the calling of rebuttal witnesses, the taking of testimony ended. And then the defense lawyer rose to begin his summation to the jury.
Your Honor, members of the jury, the defendant in this case has suffered more than has given a lot of most men to suffer. He was struck down in his prime, crippled, deprived of everything he had to live for. Deprived, too, of the one person whose love and affection might have made his agony bearable. If he had been a younger man, perhaps he might have adjusted himself. Youth, at least, can hope. But Judson Fisk felt he was too old to hope to win the love of any woman. But he was young enough in spirit to long for the life he could never live again. To wait in the still watches of the night with a beloved name upon his lips, and turn, find an empty place beside him. Then into the bleakness of his life came a young and beautiful girl who offered him her love. Is there any wonder that Judson Fisk loved her with a love far more intense than most men ever know? Is there any wonder he feared to lose her with a fear that bordered upon mania? You've heard the specialist, Dr. Pearson, explain to you what the effects of such a fear would be upon the mind of one who suffered, as Judson Fisk does, from arteriosclerosis. Is it not clear that under the grip of his powerful emotions, he relapsed into a dreamlike state? The higher centers of the brain were paralyzed, and he behaved with as little self-control as a willful, spoiled infant. It was in this state that he insulted his wife's friends and threw a drink in a man's face. It was in this state that he shot his wife. Members of the jury, this man has suffered far beyond any power of ours to add or detract. But somewhere in the future, there may still be happiness for him. I beg of you to give him the chance to find, through suffering, happiness and peace of mind at the last. Let your verdict be not guilty.
The prosecution will sum up. May it please your honor, members of the jury. I must agree with the attorney for the defense that the defendant has suffered. Heaven knows it is no wish of mine to add to what he's been through. But I would like to point out that men every day suffer terrible accidents. Every day a man somewhere loses his wife. And these people go on living courageously, seeking new occupations, new interests, new ways to fill the voids in their lives. Now, the defense has advanced the ingenious theory that the defendant was in a dreamlike state when he shot his wife, induced by his powerful emotions. But, gentlemen, I ask you, how long can such a state persist? Is the emotion so strong that it can cause a trance to last from late one evening, to survive a good night's sleep? Do you think the defendant was not responsible for his actions when he drove into town the next morning and purchased himself a pistol with the avowed purpose of murdering his wife? Members of the jury, this is cold-blooded murder wrought by a weak, contemptible man. It is premeditated murder. Murder in the first degree.
Homicide while temporarily insane, or willful murder? How would you have judged Judson Fisk? We will bring you the verdict in a moment. The jury was out for 48 hours before they filed back into the courtroom to give their verdict on Judson Fisk.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, how do you find the defendant?
We find the defendant, Judson Fisk, shot and killed his wife while temporarily insane.
And so ended the trial of Judson Fisk, with an acquittal on the technical grounds of temporary insanity. And Judson Fisk did what he could to expiate the terrible tragedy for which he was responsible. He sold his home and donated the proceeds, together with the greater part of his fortune, to endow the hospital in the city in which he lived, and then disappeared from his native town to remain unheard from until some 3 years later, when it was reported that the ship on which he was traveling was torpedoed, and he had refused to endanger the lives of the other passengers by taking his place in the overcrowded lifeboat, and had gone down with the ship. Famous jury trial. The drama of the court, drawn from actual courtroom cases. This is a Grace Gibson radio production, directed by Lawrence H. Sethel.